All right, if you open your Bibles to Luke chapter 12, we'll continue in our study of the life of Christ as we get into a study of the parables that Jesus used many of in teaching. We talked last week from Matthew chapter 13 in terms of why did he preach and teach in parables. And many would perhaps think that he was doing that to try and conceal, you know, the insight that we need to have. But actually, in Matthew chapter 13, Jesus said, I taught in parables so that they would be able to see, to understand, and ultimately so that I could heal them, they could be saved. And so we need to appreciate what Jesus, the purpose for which he taught in parables, so that again, we can have further insight into so many of the parables dealing with the kingdom that he came to establish. And it allows us, again, to understand that kingdom even better. And it employs our hearts and our minds to understand these parables, to make the application. And we talked about the word parable comes from a Greek word which simply means to lay alongside. And we talked about the need to, again, not just understand the physical example, but again, to make the parallel, to make the jump over to the application. And again, using the example from the Old Testament of David, and how that again, David, originally when Nathan used that parable, David stayed on the side of the application, and he stayed in the story, and he never jumped over to that parallel side of thou art the man until Nathan challenged him on that. And so as we study these parables, and we're going to get the next parable into like the parable of the barren fig tree, and we're going to talk about how did Jesus have application of these parables directly to the human audience at that time? Yes. And so when we talk like about the parable of the barren fig tree, there were those in that audience at that time that needed that message. But again, the challenge for us is not just to learn it in terms of the audience at that time. The challenge is for us to understand the parable in terms of the application to ourselves, to make sure that, again, we understand that there is an application we need to make. All right, so Luke chapter 12, we're going to read the context of verses 13 through 21, if I can get someone to volunteer to read that for us tonight. Mickey?
Luke 12:13-21. And one out of the multitude said unto him, Teacher, bid my brother divide the inheritance with me. But he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed, and keep yourselves from all covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not of the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. He reasoned within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have not where to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater. There will I bestow all my grain and my goods. I will say to my soul, Soul, I have much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou foolish one, This night is thy soul required thee, and the things which thou hast prepared, whose shall they be? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself, and is not rich toward God.
Alright, so we pointed out last week again, the scenario here is he has a large multitude. Again, there are so many people, they're what? They're stepping on each other. I wouldn't want to be one of those to be stepped on. But again, we see the larger audience. We noted from the end of the prior chapter that there are also people plotting against him now, trying to destroy him. And he has been teaching them about hypocrisy, about the need to, again, understand that everything that we say and think is going to be made known. He's talked about God's care for us. He's talked about when we are brought before rulers and authorities, trust the Holy Spirit to guide you. And it's in the midst of this spiritual feast in terms of teaching that Jesus is doing, that someone raises their hand in this large audience and says, What?
Divide the inheritance with me.
I'm not getting my fair share. You know, my brother owes me part of my inheritance. And I can just picture it, most of us would understand someone rolling their eyes in terms of, Are you listening? Again, where is your mind? What are you thinking about? And evidently, while Jesus is trying to teach about the heart of man, about the need to focus on the things above, someone's thought process is still stuck on, I want the things of this life. And we pointed out, is he saying my other brother doesn't deserve any? No, he's just saying I just want my fair share. Just give me what's mine. And we talk about, again, the greed and covetousness, how that, again, part of the deception there is we think that greed and deception means we're trying, greed and covetousness means we're trying to get more than our fair share. Greed can be simply, again, I have what I need, but I want more. And we talk about the Greek word pleonexia, again, that insatiable desire for more. And it's in this context that this man says, Jesus, make things fair. And we talked about the fact that Jesus, and again, what was the term that was used as Jesus replied to this man? What did he call him? He said, man. Again, and I think emphasizing, how is he thinking? As a man. You know, as someone who's focused on fleshly things. And he says, who made me a judge or arbiter over you? We talk about the fact that beware and be on your guard. Literally, again, have your eyes open towards and then set a guard around. So it's kind of a two-step thing. Watch out for, have your eyes open to, and then again, put things in your life that will help prevent this from happening. And again, it's kind of like the castle concept. Again, you want to be up there on the castle wall watching out, but you need to have something in place to, again, keep the enemy out. So beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. How many forms are there? There's a lot of forms of greed. We need to watch out for all of them. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of. And again, we're talking about more than just a moment in time. We're talking about how we live our life, our approach towards life. And what do we think our life is about? Again, is our life about what we get and the things that we have? And to that end, then Jesus teaches a parable in verse 16. And in this parable that we're going to call the parable of the rich fool, he's rich. Jesus calls him a fool. And it begins, let's consider the condition of this rich man that was just read for us. His present, according to this parable, what's his present state? I'm sorry? He has plenty. And it says, what about his land? His land's been very productive. Again, things have worked out well. He's planted crops, and the crops have yielded much fruit. And he not only has crops, but does he have a place to put those crops? Yeah. Does he have barns already? Yes, he does. I'm sorry? He's got so much he doesn't know what to do with it. Okay? And he wondered, again, he's got barns, but there's more than what goes in those barns. So his question is, what am I going to do? Okay, what am I going to do with all of these blessings? What is God, again, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19. Paul tells Timothy, when you preach the gospel, you need to preach about what to do when you have more than what you need. And verses 6, 17 through 19 teach us what? Who's got that? David?
1 Timothy 6, 17 through 19. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed.
It's interesting. It's almost like Paul was thinking about this parable when he wrote this message to Timothy. Because again, verse 19 talks about something this rich man was thinking about. He was thinking about storing up. But what does, again, Paul tell Timothy? Think about storing up what? A good foundation, again, for the future. Again, what good foundation was the man in this parable thinking about? Taking care of all my financial and physical needs. That was his foundation. But Paul says, Timothy, you need to think about this as you preach the gospel. Preach about a foundation of the spiritual nature. And those who are blessed with the things of this life, he said in verse 17, don't be conceited about that. Don't fix your hope. You know, don't base your future on the physical things of life, but on God. And again, we'll talk about in a moment about what's missing in this parable. But on God who richly supplies all things to us, instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. So for those that, again, are blessed with the things in this life, that's what Paul tells Timothy. You're going to preach to some who have more than what they need, who are blessed by God and need to, again, have this attitude about those things. First,
you know, I was looking at verse 14, and it really stands out because, you know, first of all, Jesus says, man, who appointed me a judge and arbitrator? So man must know, the man knows who Jesus is. And he knows that Jesus is of authority.
But how many people looked at Jesus? You go back to John chapter 6. How many people were looking at Jesus in terms of being a physical king who's going to, again, deal with the physical blessings, who's going to make physically things fair and so forth? And could this man, again, have been of that mindset of you're just going to take care of all of my physical needs, right? And again, we talked last week from 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and first part of 1 Corinthians 3 about those who, again, walking like mere men, that they will not understand these things because, again, their minds are set on the things here on earth.
Well, it's like the feeding of the 5,000, you know. That happened, and it wasn't soon after that that they were crowding around him and following him. Not because they saw the miracle or realized what happened.
Right.
They wanted to be fed again.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So here's his place right here. This man's asking about worldly things.
Right.
Completely misses what Jesus is teaching.
And in this parable, again, he's speaking of a man who, how much spiritual thinking is going on here?
Not a whole lot.
No. And we'll make a point about that by the words that Jesus uses in this parable. But first of all, the condition of this man is he's blessed. We're blessed today, aren't we? And again, there are some responsibilities with these blessings beyond, again, being ready to share. We'll make this point, we'll make it again, but what another responsibility when we're blessed by God so much as this man was, as we are, is to be thankful for these things, to give thanks to God, to recognize that, again, we're stewards of these blessings. Number two, and again, note, was there anything said in this parable that he cheated people out of all of these, you know, that he, did he gain these blessings dishonestly? Doesn't say it. Could have just been a very good farmer. Okay, just he worked real hard at what he did. It's not a matter of, again, there are passages to talk about it in the book of Proverbs about dishonest gain and how that, again, that will not last. But we're not even talking here about dishonest gain. And we need to remember that. Number two, what did he say he was going to do with his abundance?
Store it up.
Okay, I'm simply going to, again, gather it together. The word store simply means that. I'm going to bring it into one place. And again, what did he say he was going to use it for?
His personal pleasure.
His personal pleasure. Then I will say to myself,
eat, drink,
and be merry. Again, have a good life. I'm going to live it up. I'm going to store all these things, and someday I will enjoy all these things. I will use them again for my pleasure. Number three, the condition of this man. How long did he think he had? He thought he had time to come, didn't he? Yeah? It's, anybody relate to that? You know, do we again make decisions and we're thinking again, nothing wrong with again being good stewards of what we're given. Again, we're putting a little aside and so forth, but are we thinking in our minds, yeah, of course I'm going to live 80, 85, 90, whatever the case may be. I've got a perpetual lease on life. Bruce?
Yeah, in verse 19, where he says, my soul. And soul, you know, so he's really not, I mean, he's into things of material, but he's happy. He, he's like you say, he's blessed like most people around today.
Well, it's interesting to think about, he's got a lot, and he's got a lot to be thankful for, doesn't he? But it's interesting, we'll make this point in a moment, but we'll go ahead and make it now. When does he say he's going to really be happy? Okay, right. Yeah, then I will say to myself, after I've torn down my barns and built bigger barns, then I will say to myself, self, you've laid up yourself many good years to come, eat, drink, and be merry. Does he see, again, the ability, like Solomon recognized in the book of Ecclesiastes, to work hard and to enjoy the blessings God gives you today? Do you see the enjoyment today that he has in those blessings? And again, we need to today enjoy and give thanks and glory to God for the blessings today that we have been given.
He's so blessed, sitting overlooking God.
I'm sorry?
He's so blessed, sitting overlooking God. Like he's doing everything on his own.
Well, and that's an excellent point. He's, again, there's no mention of who in this, of God, okay? So again, he thought he had many years to come. And again, how many of us think that tomorrow or tonight could be our last day? How many of us look ahead and think, my actuarial table says I've got another 25 years to live. Do we? We shared news this week of someone who preaches the gospel who didn't make it home. It's a sobering thought. This night, our soul may be required of us. James chapter 4, 13 through 17. Who's got that? Mick?
James 4, 13 through 17. Come now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into the city and spend a year there, trade and get gain, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. What is your life? Ye are a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall both live and do this or that. But now ye glory in your conscience, all such glory is evil. To him therefore that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him is sin.
When we have this attitude of I have many years to come, I'm going to tear down my barns, build bigger barns, I've got my future all laid out. James says that's sin. Yeah, that's sinful. It's evil. Isaiah chapter 56, verses 9 through 12. Who has that? Yeah, we'll go ahead and read 9 through 12. Okay, Bruce, got that.
All the beasts of the field come to devour, and all the beasts of the forest, his watchmen are blind. They are all without knowledge. They are all silent dogs. They cannot bark. Dreaming, laying down, loving to slumber. The dogs have mighty appetite, and they never have enough. But they are shepherds. They are shepherds who have no understanding, and they have all turned into their own way, each to his own gain, and one. And all. They come, they say, and let me get wine, and let us fill ourselves with strong drink, and tomorrow will I like this day, great beyond measure.
That last part of verse 12, tomorrow will be like today, only more so. Again, it's just, and in the New Testament, where do we read in the New Testament of people who came to the conclusion that nothing changes and so Christ is never going to come again and life is just going to continue on? 2 Peter 3, people were advocating the false doctrine that things just continue as they always have. So this idea of Jesus coming again and us being accountable, it just must not be anything to it. That phrase, though, tomorrow will be like today, only more so. It's who tempts us with that? Satan does, yeah. All right. The condition of this rich fool. Number four, who did he look to for his security, and who did he credit with his abundance?
He patted himself on the back.
Yes, he patted himself on the back. Psalm chapter 49 and verse 18. That phrase is almost used there. And actually, who's up for a longer reading? Richard, do you want to read the whole chapter?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Listen, this whole chapter is dealing with this parable. And listen to it.
Psalms 49. Hear this, all ye peoples. Give ear, all ye inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor together. My mouth shall speak wisdom, and the meditation of my heart shall be of understanding. I will incline mine ear to a parable. I will open my dark saying upon the harp. Wherefore should I fear in the days of evil, when iniquity at my heels compasseth me about? They that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him, for the redemption of their life is costly, and it faileth forever, that he should live alway, that he should not see corruption. For he shall see it. Wise men die, the fool and the brutish alike perish, and leave their wealth to others. Their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever, and their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. But man, being in honor, abideth not. He is like the beasts that perish. This their way is their folly. Yet after them men approve their sayings. They are appointed as a flock for Sheol. Death shall be their shepherd, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning, and their beauty shall be for Sheol to consume, that there be no habitation for it. But God will redeem my soul from the power of Sheol, for he will receive me. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him. Though while he lived, he blessed his soul, and men praise thee when thou doest well to thyself, he shall go to the generation of his fathers. They shall never see the light. Man that is in honor and understandeth not is like the beasts that perish.
The New American Standard, in verse 12 and 20, it reads, but man in his pomp. And that idea of his own glory, his own honor, but that, you see how that whole psalm was written about this parable. Interestingly, a couple of points about that. When we think about greed and covetousness, do we think about those who are poor who want more? And we think about the temptation of those who don't have a lot that they might be tempted. Yes, that's true. Is there perhaps a way of thinking where we think, well, rich people don't have to worry about greed. They've got it all. No. That idea, and we pointed out, that's the whole very definition of covetousness, that no matter where you are, you still want more. And notice verse 2, both low and high and rich and poor together. These things apply. Whether we have a lot or whether we don't, we have a danger. Those who, verse 6, trust their wealth and boast in the abundance of their riches. We see that in this parable, don't we? About boasting in the things that we have. But verse 7 and 8, again, are so important to this. What will money, what will inheritance, what will the greatest 401k plan in the world not do for you? It won't redeem you. It won't buy your soul back. And can you use your inheritance and your retirement funds to buy anybody else back?
No.
The redemption of a soul is costly. In fact, it costs so much. The price, again, was the blood of our Savior, Jesus Christ. You can't save up enough And sometimes we think again that all of our accumulation. What do we realize also from verse 10 of this chapter? What happens to everybody?
We all die.
We're all going to die. We all will perish. Again, and we don't see that recognition in this parable of this fool, of a realization of, again, why am I gathering all this and, again, hoarding this up together? Again, notice back in the parable in Luke chapter 12, what are the pronouns that are used throughout this parable? I and me, okay? I and me. There are, I counted eight I's and four my's, okay, in these few short verses. Oh, in terms of, again, this aspect of focused on self, Psalms 10, verses 3 and 4. For the wicked boasts of his heart's desire, and the greedy man curses and spurns the Lord. The wicked in his haughtiness, up his countenance, does not seek him. All of his thoughts are, there is no God. And again, our thoughts revolve around, again, what's in it for me? What will my life be like? Number five, the condition of this rich man, he was focused on, and Bruce, you pointed out that the word, and I get confused sometimes in the New Testament, the words soul and spirit sometimes are used interchangeably. And here throughout this parable, the word, I think most translations use the word soul, right? But the Greek word that's used here is the Greek word psuche. You know what that means? It means the breath of man. It's talking about our physical, our animal life, as it were. It's what the beasts of the field have. They have this animated, they have this psuche, this breath, or the breath of life. In John chapter 12, and in verse 25, is where Jesus, beginning in verse 24, says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and it dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. He who loves his life loses it, and he who hates his life in this world will keep it to eternal life." It's this Greek word psuche. When you love your physical life, when it's all about, again, this physical life and our physical bodies and this physical existence, we've lost what? Our spiritual life. But if we can lose our focus on our physical life, and we're not worried and caught up about the things that deal with our physical body and our physical well-being and the physical things, we've gained what? Our spiritual life, our spiritual well-being. He who loses his life, again, will find it, and will find life eternal. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 11, the key to overcoming Satan is that three things that are mentioned in that verse: the blood of the Lamb, the word of their testimony, and they did not love their life even unto death. They were so devoted to Christ, and we were able to overcome Satan because they did not love their physical life. That the breath that was in them was not that important. We talk about Philippians chapter 1. And again, how did Paul feel about that physical life that was in him? I'd just soon give that up. I have something greater in heaven. And so again, we need to have this attitude. But this, in this parable, when he says, "Soul, thou hast laid up for you many goods," he's talking about his fleshly, his breath, his life, his physical existence. And that's where his focus was. As opposed to, again, pneuma, which is the Greek word that's used for the eternal spirit or the rational soul of man. Back in Genesis chapter 1, that's the part that makes us created in God's own image. That pneuma. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 23, one example of where that word is used. We're so blessed to be able to, again, with the tools that we have today, be able to identify, again, how these words are used. where it says, beginning in verse 22, but you've come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, to the heavenly Jerusalem, to the myriads of angels, to the general assembly, and church of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of the righteous made perfect. Again, that's the Greek word pneuma. It's your soul. It's your, again, the eternal spirit that he says has been made perfect through, again, the forgiveness of sins. We made this point earlier, but we'll make it again here now. When did he say he would take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry? Now or later? Later, yeah. After he had torn down his barns and built bigger barns, then he would again take thy ease, eat, drink, and be merry. And again, the point from Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. Again, how we need to, the wise man, approach life is as he struggled to find, quote, the meaning of life. In verses 1 and 2 of Ecclesiastes 6, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is... What's that? In those verse 1. This evil is prevalent among men. Okay, he saw this a lot. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor so that his soul lacks nothing of all that he desires. Does that ring a bell here? Yet God has not empowered him to eat from them, for a foreigner enjoys him. This is a vanity and a severe affliction. What did Solomon see a lot of? People accumulating wealth and they don't enjoy it. Again, his whole, and I didn't, this earlier that Solomon talked about in this book about that what's good for a man is to work and to labor and to enjoy the fruits of his labor and give thanks to God, to realize it's a gift from God, to be able to work, to be able to toil, to be able to earn based upon the work. Chapter 3, verse 12. Okay. Yeah, I know. Yeah, there you go. I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all of his labor. It's a gift of God. God's given that to us. We need to be careful that our attitude towards life is, I'm going to work, and I'm going to work, and I'm going to work, and someday I'm going to enjoy it, and someday I'm going to be thankful for it, and someday I'm going to, again, take my ease and eat, drink, and be merry. When Solomon said the real gift of God is to do what? Come home at the end of the day and to have something to eat, to enjoy it with the wife of your youth, and to be thankful for it, and not to defer it to some other day. Again, chapter 4 and verse 8 of Ecclesiastes, there was a certain man without a dependent, having neither a son nor a brother, yet there was no end to all his labor, and these his eyes were not satisfied with riches, and he never asked, and for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure? This too is vanity and is a grievous task. So not only did Solomon himself struggle with, again, where do I find pleasure, but Solomon looked around at a lot of people and said, they're just working to accumulate, and they're going to end up leaving it to somebody else. And who knows what they're going to do with it. Three more things about this man. He had stored up treasure for himself. Again, we've made that point. It was all about his need. Did he have any needs? Was there any concern of his? Well, the one concern he should have had, he didn't have. But it reminds me again of Revelation chapter 3, verse 17, which is the church letter to the church of the Laodiceans. And the Laodiceans' attitude was what? I am rich and have need of nothing. I don't need anything. In fact, they were so rich they didn't need who? They didn't need God. They didn't need the Lord. And the Lord told them to repent. They needed to change that. And number 8, he may have been rich regarding his barns, but he was not rich towards God. Revelation chapter 2, verse 9, there again in the message to Smyrna. Again, the world looked at Smyrna. What do they think of that church? Poor. They don't look like much. They don't have a big fancy building, but he said, Jesus said to them, I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich. You're rich towards God. Again, in chapter 3 and verse 18, again, back to the church of Laodicea, Jesus told them, you do have needs. But again, he wanted them to focus on true riches. And he said in verse 18, regarding the need to repent, I advise you to buy from me gold refined by fire so that you may become rich, and white garments so that you may clothe yourself, and that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and I salve to anoint your eyes so that you may see. Again, his desire is that we be rich, but again, rich towards him. And again, in this parable, he did not see that. And finally, his master was his possession. His possessions and his treasure was his barns. And again, Matthew chapter 6, verses 20 through 24. Again, who are we going to present ourselves to? We studied this in the Sermon on the Mount. In terms of, again, where are we going to lay up treasures? And wherever our treasure is, there is our heart. And again, where was this man's heart in this parable? It was in the barn. It was in the barn. Romans chapter 6, verse 15 and following, talk about the fact of who we're going to present ourselves as servants of. And again, who did this rich man present himself as a servant of? Himself, of possessions, of mammon. We're going to talk, we talked about that. We're going to talk about it again in another parable. Of serving mammon, of serving, again, riches. We, again, can't get to the point where we are its slave. What was to happen to the rich man? We talked about his present condition. But his situation regarding what was to come. First of all, he would not have many years to come. Again, we may think right now, I don't see where, again, my life is going to be cut short. We don't see what's coming. And so he would die. And the phrase that is used, his soul would be required of him. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 7, as the wise man talks about the fact that, again, we all age, and we're blessed to age if we are so, see some of those things that happen. But eventually the point in time comes when what will happen, according to verse 7? Yeah, and what happens to that pneuma inside of us? It goes back to God who gave it to us. Again, it will return to Him. Again, this phrase, your soul is required of you. Again, our pneuma, that life within us, that eternal being, will go back to God. And again, it will be judged. And so we need to make sure, we've already read from Psalms 49, 1 through 20. Again, that's a powerful chapter. Number two, he amassed wealth that would what? He would not enjoy. He did not get to ever eat, drink, and be merry. But he left it to someone else. We don't read in the parable about any family. It doesn't matter. He accumulated all this, and it was going to be left to someone else. And again, those passages in Ecclesiastes help make that point. Solomon saw that a lot. People work their whole lives to build something up, to build their dream home, to build this life that they are just aiming for one day, and then what happens? And then so often, what do you see that happened to rich people that work their whole lives to build up their empire, and they die, and then what happens to it? The family fights over it, and they, the son that he always wanted to leave his business to really wasn't that interested. And how often have you heard about the second or third generation running mom or dad's business into the ground after they die? And number three, what would happen to this man? What did Jesus call him? A fool. He would be a fool and he would be mocked. I guess I'm going to read Psalms 52, verses 5 through 7.
Psalms 52, 5 through 7. God will likewise destroy thee forever. He will take thee up and pluck thee out of thy tent and root thee out of the land of the living. Their righteous shall all, the righteous shall also see it and fear and shall laugh at him, saying, lo, this is a man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness.
I would suggest that perhaps we not just chuckle out of humor, but we see such a person, and as we look around, do we see also people who, again, are accumulating for themselves with no vision towards, again, their soul being required of them? Should we look at that with admiration? Again, I think that when it says that they will laugh, again, at such a one, that we should see the foolishness of that. Laugh at it in terms of, that's not going to be me. And it's not going to be me from this passage, because behold, the man who would not make what? Verse 7. Would not make God his strength or his refuge. This, in this parable, this rich man had made what his refuge?
his
riches, his barns, yes. And so we need to, again, see and fear when we think about this, when we think about, again, those that we know have known that their lives have been taken from them so very quickly and prematurely. And we think, again, why am I working? Why am I laboring? We work because, again, that's how God has directed us to provide for the needs that we have. But again, we know that we go far beyond that sometimes, and Satan will tempt us. He will tempt us to, again, be like this rich man and not concern ourselves with our spiritual needs, our pneuma, but our psuche, about the things of this life, about working hard so that at some point in time I can retire and eat, drink, and be merry. Okay? Nothing wrong with, again, retirement. But hopefully we've had examples in our lives of those who did retire and then used their full retirement to do what? Serve themselves? To serve God. To serve their brethren. So again, if we're blessed to be in that position, should we not use our time and our blessings to, again, serve the church, serve the Lord's church, serve other people? Again, to use what God has given us, again, as Paul told Timothy, to serve other people. But again, that I recognize it. I hope we all do, that temptation. And it's so subtle. And Satan is so devious and deceptive about it. We just have to be very, very, very careful. Lessons learned. What are our takeaways from this?
Teach us to number our days.
Where's that found?
I didn't know that. I'm wrong.
Psalms 90 and verse 12. Yeah. But no, that's important. Value our days. Value our time right now. What else?
Our focus does need to be on God first.
Okay. On guard for?
On God.
Oh, focus on God first. Yes, have our minds set on the things above. Think about, again, are we laying up treasures in heaven? What else?
Sharing.
I'm sorry?
Sharing.
Okay, and if we are blessed, it's to use them the way that God would have for us to use our blessings. So again, use our blessings from God as He would have us to. Look beyond self and the temporal things of this life. You know, when my mom passed away, she had a lot of difficulties in her health and so forth, and as I thought about her life, it was one of looking outside of herself. And what's the expression about someone who's wrapped up in themselves? They make a mighty small package. You know, that when we get ourselves wrapped up in ourselves, that the need to look outside of ourselves, to look for the opportunities. And again, this rich fool, was he looking outside of himself? And sometimes when we look outside of ourselves, we perhaps see the opportunities. Somebody say, well, I don't see any opportunities to do good, you know, to be rich and generous. Are we looking? Okay. Are we looking for those? And I think, you know, one of the big takeaways, don't be presumptuous about the future. Again, teach us to number our days, that we may present to thee. How's that end?
gain a heart of wisdom.
A heart of wisdom, yeah. And again, that's interesting because Jesus said of him, not thou wise man, but thou fool. But the heart of wisdom is going to say, this is the day that God has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And I don't remember where that one's found. it's Psalm 100 or something. So, in all these things, we need to, again, think about the fact that Satan is very active today. There are plenty of opportunities for us to adopt this mindset that this rich fool had. And to learn, again, these very practical, fundamental lessons about take care of today. Look beyond ourselves. Set our minds on the things above. And again, being rich toward God.
And we also have to do it when we don't have to be rich to share and do the things that we need to do for others.
Yeah. No, you don't have to be. What's the greatest gift you can give? Is it your money? Yourself. Yeah. We think about 2 Corinthians chapter 8, that the brethren of Macedonia first did what before they gave beyond their means? They first gave themselves to the Lord. Yeah. You're right. Do you have to have a big bank account to give yourself to the Lord? No. All right. My goal next week is to, you know, chapter 12 is a long chapter. My goal is to finish the chapter. Okay? But I believe, look at it from this perspective. Read beginning in verse 22 all the way to the end of the chapter and ask yourself, does this answer the question of, if I'm not going to be a fool, how do I need to live? Because I think the whole rest of this chapter has to do with this parable. Okay? And how we make sure that we're not a fool like this man is.